What are you doing?
Honestly, I thought we agreed to not do harsh chemicals in the yard, but you seem so certain and excited, so...
What are you talking about?
The Roundup. You say you wanted to do Roundup on a monthly basis.
No, I meant a monthly Roundup.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. You were so busy, so I went to Home Depot and... I went to Home Depot and I got us Roundup and I've done about half of the yard already, so we won't have to do it again until around, you know, July.
No, I meant a monthly board game Roundup as a podcast episode. What? How do we wash this stuff off?
Whoops.
Hi, I'm Jaina.
And I'm Sharon.
And together, we're Jasses Be Gantsy.
Moving you from antsy to Gantsy.
And today...
We're talking about pesticides!
No, we talked about this. We're not.
No, we're not talking about... I thought that was a board game, like Pesticides, the board game.
Huh, I actually think that's a theme that hasn't been done yet.
Yeah.
There's all these nature games. Maybe
you have like the weeds that keep popping up and you need to actually to try and find different ways to kill off the weeds so that your flowers or your bushes grow. And then there's like a rounded scoring per season. And depending on whether you know, your yield and how much fruits you get, then you get a certain point. And then the game end scoring could be just overall how healthy your yard is because you're trying to plant new. This should be our new board game.
Okay. No one steal that.
No one steal it. It's ours.
Dibs.
Dibs. That's legally binding. We have legally dibbed internationally. Trademark copyrighted.
Okay. Should we talk about what we're actually talking about?
Pesticides. We're talking about pesticides.
Oh my God. I give up.
We're not talking about pesticides?
No, we're talking about the games we played the last month.
Well, you said you were going to do Roundup.
A roundup of the games we played. We're rounding them all up in one place to talk about them.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because eagle-eared listeners would notice that we did not have an episode last week. We'd been away for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we couldn't come up with any ideas. So here we are. We're... hopefully going to do like a monthly roundup
mm-hmm.
of just the games we played last month, the previous month. Because when left to my own devices, I play a lot of games. Okay, yeah, let's dive in then. No comment on that. All right.
I mean, you do play a lot of games. I don't know what to comment. I agree. I concur. You do indeed play a lot of games.
Excellent. So this is a fairly long list. Most of them I'm just going to touch on really quickly. And then a few of them we'll probably talk about a little more in depth. You've maybe played half of these.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be interesting.
Oh, you don't have Wordle, the board game, on here. Oh, no, you do. Oh, yeah. I just can't read your fugly writing.
Your writing's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll just start at the beginning.
Okay.
So earlier this month, I finally got to play Acropolis, which has been the darling of everyone and everything lately.
What is Acropolis? I feel like I've heard of this before.
It's kind of similar-ish to King Domino.
Oh.
Where you're trying to get similar, I say, land types. It's set in Greece, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, instead of like domino tiles, there's hexagons, but three of them connected together. For each tile.
Okay.
And each hexagon is usually like a different type of city area. And so like King Domino, you want to try and get them together so you can score more when they're all together. Well, it depends on the land, actually. There's merchant markets. Those want to be by themselves. You don't want to be competing with like a market right next door.
Okay.
Then there's, I think it's like sleeping areas or something. Those you want to cluster them all together. Because that makes sense, you know, keep all the quiet stuff together. Then there's barracks. They want to be on the edge of the city so the military can guard the city.
So it's kind of like Carcassonne with the tile laying and creating a map. But how do you score?
So to score an area, it's not just enough to have a tile with that area on it. You also then have to get a tile with at least one star that corresponds to that, the color of that area.
And are you building your own map, or is everyone laying out?
You are building your own. Like, everyone's building their own. You're drafting from a central row of tiles. And it's basically like, if you can take the first tile for free. If you want to skip any, you have to lay down stones to skip them.
Century Spice Road type of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the kind of interesting twist is that not only are you building out, you want to and actually like have to build up. Because if your tile's on the second level, you get more points. Mm. Like every tile on the first level, say you're scoring, let's just say scoring like the barracks. You're going to get basically a point per barrack as long as it's situated in the right spot, depending on how many stars you have. If you had three visible stars for barracks and you had two barracks, you'd be getting 3 points for each of them, so 6 points. But if those barracks are on the second level, now you're getting 3 times 2, 6 points for one barrack. So you want to keep building up. As well, one of the city types is going to give you more stone when you build their quarry. So when you build on top of them, you get stone in return, which you really need to be able to get the tiles you want. Mm. You run out of those initial kind of resources very quickly.
It sounds like it's more complicated, or there's more involvement compared to King Domino, because you kind of compared that to that game.
Yeah.
What's the complexity level, would you say, off the top of your head?
A 2 something? It's not very hard. I'm doing a poor job explaining it. Once you get into it, it's pretty straightforward.
Oh, very cool.
Actually, I really liked it. Yeah. We should play it. It's on Board Game Arena.
Okay.
Yeah.
Acropolis. Mm-hmm. All right. What's next on your roundup?
All right. Next game we played, we finally got to play True Colors.
Oh my gosh, it's been years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had our friend buy a copy for us over in the States, and we had every intention to go visit them very soon, and very soon then dragged out until, well, just a couple weeks ago.
Basically. And so True Colors, it's kind of like therapy, which I think we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those party-ish games that, like, really the mechanisms aren't that good. It drags on, but we just remember from my university days, like, just, it's all about learning about each other. Like, who do you think is the most likely to, I don't know, be in a punk band or something? Like, all those types of questions.
Or a cult leader.
Mm-hmm. Or who would make the best cult leader? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So True Colors basically takes that part, which is the most fun part of that game, and boils it down. That's it. That's the game. You're voting on, there's all sorts of questions. You're voting on who you think it would be the best. You have basically every round you're going to cast 2 votes. If you really think it's just one person, you can put their color in twice. If you think there's 2 people that it could match, you can put 1 for each. And then you have to guess how you think people are going to vote about you. And if you're right, you're going to get some points.
It's, I think this is one of those games that can be really fun if you're playing with a group of people that you know quite well.
And everyone needs to know everyone equally.
Right. This is a game to play for fun, not to win, because as soon as someone gets strategic to try and win it, then it really loses its charm.
You can tank it by trying to be strategic.
Yeah, because it's really not about winning. It's about getting to know your friends and learning about how other people perceive you.
I will say a lot of the questions were tamer than I expected. The ones, the like kind of, I don't know, more morality ones, the like deeper ones were way more fun. There were too many like casual questions in there. I wish, and maybe we just happened to get the like kind questions.
Maybe.
I wanted some more bitey questions.
I agree. Maybe they should, if they have it already, do a bitier expansion or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For friends that really don't want to be friends anymore.
Yeah. It was a really easy game to just set up. We actually played on the beach with this game. Even though it was kind of mildly windy, it was still very much manageable.
Yeah.
Very portable game. Very light social game. And if you have a bunch of close friends that just like talking about each other and learning about each other and just having fun, this is the game for you.
Definitely. All right, that was True Colors.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, we have Wordle, the party game.
Oh, my gosh.
So it turns out our friends really like word games, which we should have known because they were the ones that introduced us to Bananagrams way back
years ago, yes.
So when we were at Target, they picked up Wordle. And Wordle, the party game, is exactly like Wordle.
Except one of the participants of the game gets to be the I guess, word creator.
Well, yeah. So the game lasts, at least we were playing with four players, it lasts four rounds. Mm-hmm. Each person gets to be the word creator once. Mm-hmm. And then everyone has their own little privacy screens mm-hmm. and dry erase markers. And basically they start, they write down a word. Mm-hmm. Whoever came up with the word comes around and puts either, you know, exactly like Wordle, a green little translucent piece to mark that that's the right letter in the right spot, or a yellow one to mark that that's the right letter in the wrong spot.
Mm-hmm. And you go from there.
And yeah, you've got seven chances to get the word right.
Yep.
And whoever has the lowest score at the end of the game wins.
Right, because you want the least number of guesses yes. to guess the word.
Yeah. This game involves a lot of yelling.
Yes.
Shockingly, for what should be a quiet, focused word game.
Writing game.
Yep. Money arguments on, okay, there is literally no letter that works to make this a word. Sharon thought she was super clever by doing breve.
It is a word. B-R-E-V-E. There's two different words, two different meanings to this word. One, you can interpret it musically, if you're classically trained in some level of music theory, which you should, miss a flute player. And number two, breve is also a coffee drink.
Yeah, only
espresso one. And half and
only
half.
One of the three of us got it.
Yeah. Well, that's not my problem. That's all of y'all's problem.
We yelled enough that we made it your problem.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, if you like Wordle and you have friends that like Wordle, sure.
Yeah.
It took longer than it should because Sharon and I are very slow.
Oh, particularly me. It takes me a really long time and our friends are incredibly patient. I feel like the game actually does have a time limit.
Oh,
or a time limit mechanism, play it that way.
Yeah, there was a method you can do like 30 seconds per guess or something.
I'd be so bad at it if it's 30 seconds. But the fun thing is, instead of yelling and screaming at the app, you can yell and scream at your friends, which obviously always enhances the experience.
Of course.
Yeah.
Speaking of yelling and screaming at your friends, the next game we played is Tokyo Game Show.
Ooh, yeah, that's a banger.
So Tokyo Game Show was a very random buy of mine. I'd heard about it once on the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast way back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, that sounds good. And then when I saw it, I had to get it. In Tokyo Game Show, you're on a game show. So one person's going to be the host.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to be picking – the rule book suggests five games to play, but you could really mix it up. And these games, I think it comes with 42 of them, 40-some. There's a lot of games you can pick from. So I just kind of went through the deck, pulled out a bunch of ones that I thought were interesting, shuffled those up, and got five random ones for us to play. And it was really fun.
It was loads of fun. Some parts funner than others. Because sometimes there are certain games where the game master or the host can make it incredibly difficult for us participants to try and do it.
I don't recall that I ever would have done that.
Yes, there was one particular game. Essentially, the host hides a bunch of different scored or different valued
point tokens
around the house. And you're supposed to essentially play a game of, I guess, treasure hunting to find that particular token. Now, here's the catch. If you turn up, I don't know, the vase and you see a point token, you look at it and it's like a two-pointer when you know that the maximum points goes up all the way up to five. You can either choose to pick up the token and sit down and you get 2 points, or you can set that token back where you found it and continue your search for a higher value token. That game, I already took a shower and that game made me run up and down and I sweated so hard because you were hiding those tokens way too weirdly.
I don't feel like, okay,
it
the
was
one
very weird.
The highest value one was pretty hard to find, but the other, everyone found the other ones except for you.
Oh my gosh. You were like, oh, it's in plain sight.
There and was one like, in plain sight.
It wasn't really in plain sight, was it? It was. The token is a 2D flat circular thing, and you placed it on the plain sight was just how thin it was because you placed it vertically on somewhere.
It was a fairly
chonky cardboard. It was a stupid game and I hated it.
Anyways, that was my favorite of the ones we played. But there were lots of others. You can kind of match it to what the people you're playing with would enjoy.
Yeah. Oh, there was one game where you were given an acronym.
Oh, yeah.
Or a bunch of gibberish letters and you needed to explain what the acronym is and provide a rationale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, that one was good.
That one was good.
We won't repeat ours because some of them were a little...
not safe for work.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So we won't do that. But that was fun. It's a game where you can, exert your physical stamina and hand-eye coordination and searching abilities as well as your creative abilities on how to BS things.
Yeah. And again, you need the right group for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. It even comes with like a little pin for whoever the game host is.
Yeah.
Which was a nice touch.
Our friends loved it enough to actually buy a copy.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a surprise hit. Excellent. All right. Next up, we played the OG classic, Catan.
Oh, my gosh. We did play Catan. We've played it once a long while ago. And we're like, there are so many better games out there than Catan. And then we played it with our friends from the States.
Yes.
And it was surprisingly fun.
I still maintain.
Yes.
It's too long for what it is.
Yeah,
now, some of that was our fault because no one really knew the value of the trades.
Right.
So we would take a long time in trading. I think if you could like tighten up that trading, it would get to the right pace.
Maybe. I think that part of our friends though, they are low key and chill, and they're just fun. Like most of their gaming experience
but also
were social
games,
but they're also incredibly competitive. So Catan was just the right type of. I feel like it is what it is. It's that entry game, right?
Well, and I think you go into it knowing if you want to play it quickly, then you have to set time limits, or it's whoever's ahead at the end of 2 hours or whatever wins.
Yeah.
Or you go into it knowing you're going to be there for 4 hours because that is how long our games took.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah. We played twice. That was how much fun we had with our friends.
And they were both pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won both times, but yeah, sure. Continue.
Yeah. 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 That was just the luck of the cards though.
Sure. I'm sure.
That was the luck of the dice.
I'm sure. That's it.
100%. And the other game, we have talked about this before, so we will be super quick. We had a couple of great games at Don't Get Caught.
Yes. Relationships were ruined. Mm-hmm. Trust was broken. But hey, we had fun.
Oh, yeah. My favorite was like I ran to the bathroom at one point and I could just hear yelling from upstairs. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to get back up there and see who got what they did.
I went upstairs and there was just this banknote, this, I don't know, American dollar on the floor, and I picked it up.
No, I think it was $5.
Was it $5? Yeah. I picked it up, and of course, I got because I was supposed to pick up the money and find the little don't get
got
thing.
Again, our sweetest innocent friend who you would not suspect of being underhanded at
it's
all.
It's always the quiet, sweet ones.
Just cleaned us out both games. Mm-hmm. Like, just slaughtered us.
Yeah.
We were just way too trusting.
It's just always, this is always a solid game, especially if you have the right people. And maybe that's the theme of this episode of Monthly
Right
Roundup. It's like, if you have the right people, this is the game for you.
And again, they liked it so much. It was on sale on Amazon. They picked it up too.
Oh, the Shut Up and Sit Down version of it too.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. So that one was a hit. All right. Let's roll through some of these quickly. So we've been playing My City on Board Game Arena with a couple of friends, and it's pretty good. It might be my favorite quote-unquote legacy game. It's quick. It's easy.
Yeah.
We're actually getting through it.
I feel like it's kind of like – it is a legacy game, but it feels kind of a cheating legacy game. The legacy game seems like pasted on. You know how like themes can be just pasted on?
Oh,
this feels
like
a pasted on legacy. It's like, sure, we'll give you a sticker after you play this round. That's going to change your map. But it's like – but does this really truly
Fair
enhance
enough.
The game? Maybe it's too early to tell, but right now as it stands, we've played a couple of rounds of it.
We just finished chapter 2.
Right. And it's like, sure, but is it a legacy game? Or are you just making it a legacy game? I do very much like it. It's like a fun, thinky Tetris where you also get to scream at the game for not turning up the right shapes.
Yes. And normally there's two or three of us screaming and one person like, oh yeah, that's perfect, that's exactly what I wanted.
it's a really nice game. I do enjoy
it. If you
that.
Like polyomino games,
yeah.
Highly recommend.
It's for me, it's a pretty sort of clean cut, straight up one type of puzzle type of game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just
and I love
polyomino
that it, yeah
fit it on a map, cover as many rocks, leave the trees alone, type of game.
I love that it's on Board Game Arena.
Yeah. That takes the setup out, and it mm-hmm. just makes it that much easier to play it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to playing it monthly in our monthly
play. Yeah. Game. And it's smart if you just start a game with the same people you played with before. It just picks up right where you left off.
Brilliant.
All right. And next, another Board Game Arena game that we love is Chakra. We've probably talked about it before, but it's very relaxing.
It's a very classic cozy. To me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's classic. It's cozy. You are mindfully trying to pick up, I guess, chakra crystals and moving them up and down. And that's the game.
And it's an efficiency puzzle, mm-hmm. but it's just a calming, peaceful one.
Yeah.
This is one when I'm allowed to get games again. I wouldn't mind picking this up. Find out if it's as calming in person.
I don't know. I really like the BGA implementation. I feel like it's fair just enough. So easy. You don't have to pick up those little crystals. I feel like it would get finicky.
You'd be in trouble if you jostled your board
in real life. Yeah, I think it'll get finicky in real life. So I am fair enjoying enough. The digital implementation. I really like that game the way it is.
Fair enough. All right, and now we come to one of our first kind of bigger games we were excited about trying, and that is a classic Reiner Knizia, Taj Mahal. So we'd picked this up. Again, I never thought I'd ever see a new and shrink copy in the wild, and saw it in, again, great board game store in Red Deer. Shout out to Wizards Loft. And it was on sale even. And there it sat for quite a while because I wasn't sure we'd ever get the group to play it with. Turns out we had a great group.
It's a mind effy game in terms of, so not a convoluted game, it's just the way the game is not how you expect the game to feel like. So it was so much more you explain the game because for me it was just so much more thought and potentially strategy to what you did, and a kind of a what do you call that? Not betting game, but like
it's a push your luck. It's a series of auctions. Yeah, yeah. They're kind of push your luck auctions. So there's basically a map of India and it's split into regions, and each region is going to represent one auction. And you're basically fighting to try and get different nobles or people into your court. But everyone, you're going to have a hand of cards, and the cards are going to have 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 icons on them. And those icons correlate to those different nobles or people you're trying to get in your court. Mm-hmm. And on your turn, you basically have to lay down 1 or 2 cards. And there's some colored cards. Most of the cards are colored. Other cards will be white. And you have to start, you play a card that's a color, like yellow, say. And then you have the option to add a white card onto that. You always have to start with a color card, play a white card if you want to. And it just keeps going around until people decide to back out or pass. And when you pass, you have the majority of any of those icons. You get to take that corresponding token, basically. And no one else can claim that round. And it seems simple enough. And basically those tokens are going to give you sometimes an ability. Normally it lets you put a palace out. So you're trying to do like a little bit of route building on the map. You can get points if you're connecting through a bunch of different provinces. You can also score through commodities. So you're also bidding on this elephant token, and that's going to have usually 2 commodities on it. And there's some other tokens that randomly get put out on the map. If you place one of your palaces there, you get to take that. Some of those have commodities on it. Some of them just give you points. And it's just a very strange, there's a lot of simple mechanisms that come together in a very mind-bendy way.
Yeah.
Because also if you're the last person in, maybe you're going to get a bunch of tokens. Maybe you're not. You're also only going to get to pick up 1 card for your next round, which is the card everyone left over. So you're constantly juggling, like you need to make sure you have enough cards to play when you want to play. You can see what auction's going to be coming up next. Oh, yeah, it was very hard to grok, I guess. Like, the rules were simple, but we were all trying to figure out what was a good play and what wasn't.
Yeah, there was a lot of just humming and hawing and trying to figure things out. And for me, I was just like, well, even when I was picking cards, there was a lot of unnecessary overthinking on my end. And
yes.
And towards the end, I'm like, I can't think anymore. I feel like these cards are good. And I just picked it up.
Yeah, and we played a full five-player game.
Yeah.
Which I think was a nice introduction for sure.
Yeah, I was the rules are simple, but I needed clarification multiple times. Like, I really thought that you play a colored card and then the next round you play a white card and then the following round you play the same colored card and then but then I finally figured out that you only play the white card if you want to play two cards at one go.
Is how I should have explained it, yes.
Yes, because all I heard, and I was in and out because we were hosting, so all I heard was color card, white card.
I got a little confused. And that's the other trick is once you start with a color, like yellow, you have to play, when you're playing a colored card, it has to be yellow.
Yeah, you kind of follow the color suit, if you will. But
it was very interactive and very tricksy.
Very tricksy. And there's some, you know, you're taking stuff from your opponents too, because we're trying to get, I think if you have enough of a certain token, you can trade it in for a special effects card and those cards can be taken away. It is giveth and taketh away from you.
Yeah. As soon as someone has two of the same
sort of
person, icon, whatever, they're going to take that card. Yeah. So there was one that just gave you, it was a white one and it just gave you 2 points when you played it.
Yeah.
So that one got passed around a lot. Or one.
And 2 points is considerable.
Yes.
In this game. So.
Yeah. And it ended in a three-way tie. And I was behind most of the game. Or one, I think, did you jump out to an early lead? Someone jumped out to an early lead.
I don't think it was me.
Other friends jumped out to an early lead. Then everyone kind of clumped together for a while, and I was trailing way behind. I thought I was out of it, but I kind of clawed my way back, and then, like, we were all within 3 points of us.
And was there no tiebreaker?
Yes, the tiebreaker was how many cards did you have left in your hand at the end of the game?
Oh, and I didn't have. I don't think I won at all.
You had, like, two or three.
Yeah.
And then I think I had eight, and Eric won it with nine.
Yeah, well-deserved.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
Good management.
Why did someone play with five? There's only four of us. I can't count. But anyways, yeah, no, it was good. And I don't know how often you'd end in a tie. That seemed really surprising.
Yeah, I'm curious. That was our first play, but it was definitely a good game.
Yeah, I think when you need to play more to try and figure it out, because I sure didn't get it. I mean, I got it, obviously, but yeah, it's one with lots of depth, I think. All right. And then after that, we played some party games. We had a big group, seven
just
of us.
One?
Yeah, so we played just one. It was really nice. I forgot how good that game
it's
is.
It's always a hit.
It is, yeah.
Just one. And that's why it won the Jars.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, again, definitely a party game. I've used this game multiple times in my work retreats. It's always fun, light, easy to explain. It's always a good time.
Well, and we learned that we have one friend that really has a lot of pop culture knowledge, like edgy pop culture knowledge. Which was unfortunate for this game because no one else knew everything that he knew. But it was really fun to learn about all these things.
Yeah, he's just way too cool for us.
Yeah.
That's probably why. It's like, yeah. I have no idea what reference that is, but it seems very intellectual, but poppy at the same time. Like, only the really cool people will know kind of thing. I'm like, okay, cool.
But yeah, it was good play. It's been too long since I played that.
And then, of course, if we're on our social game train, what's a social game night without social deduction?
So we played, well, two of them, kind of. We started with Werewords, which I've been wanting to try for ages. So glad I finally got a chance. It was pretty fun. Werewords is basically 20 questions with the hidden traitor.
Right.
So you have a couple different roles in there. Most people are just villagers. They're playing regular 20 questions, trying to guess the word that the mayor has, asking yes no questions. Mayor's putting out tokens to say whether they're right or wrong. Well, basically say yes or no. And then you will also have a werewolf. They know what the word is and they're trying to stop the group from getting that word. You will also have a seer. They also know what the word is, but they want the group to get it, but they have to try and be a little sneaky about it. Because if the werewolf at the end guesses who they are, then werewolves win.
Even if the villagers guess the right word.
Yes. And there was enough of us. We had two werewolves each round. Or most of the rounds.
I was both a villager and a werewolf. And werewolves are very difficult. I find. Like, it's very hard to ask a question that could derail things without it being very obvious.
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple of times we didn't quite know. Because I was a seer the first time, which was really hard because everyone was just shouting out questions all at once, which was a little tricky to keep up with. And then, yeah, you don't want to be too obvious, but if they're so far out, you're like, oh man, our time is running out. We got to come up with something. I thought I was sneaky, but they figured out who I was. Well, in every game, the werewolves won. Oh. I don't think the villagers ever won.
Oh, okay.
It seemed much easier to, if not derail it, I think there was only once we didn't get the word because we were using a hard word. But then it was usually easier for them to figure out who the seer was.
The hard word was the Himalayas.
Yes.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, it was tricky because none of us knew geography that well.
We knew it was in Asia. We knew it was a tourist attraction, but
We knew it had to do with snow.
Yeah, but no one could figure out exactly which part of Asia this place was because, of course, the Himalayas straddled a bunch of countries.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of question marks when it came to the location.
It was a fun game. Played really quickly.
Yeah.
Got a timer. We used the app, which just, I don't know, made it run quite smoothly. Yeah, it was quite enjoyable.
But what was more enjoyable for me was Resistance Avalon.
This game has been on our shelf of shame for a very long time.
Eons.
Like 2018-ish.
And we had a big group when we played it. I think that was a really good number. We had
seven.
Yeah, yep. That was good. That was fun. I got to play an evil character. I was a minion of something or the other, which
minion
was
of Morgoth? No, Morgoth?
Maybe.
No, Morgana. No.
Morgana sounds about right.
Morgana was definitely in there.
I am a minion.
It was a bit of a tricky start because I'd known how to play it at one point, but I'd forgotten. We had a couple of people that had played it years ago. So we actually had like one false start going on because I did not explain the rules well enough for who is supposed to put their thumbs up when you've got your eyes closed. So we had to start again. And then I got stuck as Merlin. And so basically at Resistance Avalon, you are putting together groups of people to go on quests. And whether the quest succeeds or fails depends on who's in the group. If you are good, you always have to, if you're on a quest, you always have to play the card that says succeed. If you're evil, though, you can choose to play the failure card or the succeed card. And each team just needs to get to three either successes if you're good or three fails if you're evil to win. And it seemed really hard for good in this game because I was Merlin, so I technically knew who the evil players were, but we were playing with the role. There was one evil player that I didn't know, and I had it narrowed down to two people.
So you knew I was evil?
Yes, I knew you were evil, and I knew Steve was evil, but I didn't know the third. And one of our friends just made a silly social blunder early that made him seem real sus.
Yeah, he always ends up, but that was Eric, right?
Yeah.
He always does that. He always falls into the super suspicious role when he's really just truly a good person.
Yep.
This is a recurring theme for him, actually. So I think moving forwards, whenever I play a social deduction game and he's particularly sus, I'll know that it's actually the litmus test of him being good.
But it was fun. I liked it much faster than, obviously, than Blood in the Clock Tower.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I'd probably keep this around for a while as our quick social deduction option.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was nice. It was easy. It was breezy. It was quick, and it got my social deduction cup full.
Yes, yes. All right. In the next game, I played without you.
You did. Rude.
Well, you didn't want to come.
That's true. Still rude.
And this was the Red Cathedral, which I've wanted to play for ages. So it is a fairly Euro game, but it comes in like the box is tiny. Like, it's really not a big box, but
a dense game.
Yeah, the amount of thinking you get in that box is incredible. So you are building presumably a cathedral in Russia. I didn't read the backstory. And you're actually all working together to build this cathedral.
Is it red?
Yes.
Okay.
Presumably.
Okay.
Parts of it?
Just parts of it.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of this is randomized. You draw a card at the beginning that shows you how to lay out the cathedral. And the cathedral consists of a bunch of cards in different columns. And each card shows you basically what resources you need to build that section, what reward you're going to get if you build that section. Then there's basically, it's a rondel type game. Mm. You remember Merlin?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of roll and move type thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to that. You roll a bunch of dice of different colors, and whatever value they are, you get to move that die, if you pick it, that many spots. You're going to get the resources of whatever sector it lands in. And the more dice there are in that sector, the more resources you're getting. So that's how you're trying to collect resources. You have limited space for resources. And then you also, if you want to build a section of the cathedral, you have to have claimed it first. So one of your actions, you can put out one of your claim tokens. That's going to open up more resource spaces. One of your actions is to just get resources. And your other action option on your turn is to build a section. And each turn, you choose one of those actions and you do it.
Okay.
And so you can get points throughout the game for certain things. You're also, there's a lot of endgame scoring. So it's kind of a area majority competition for each column of the cathedral. And you're getting points based on how many parts of that cathedral got built.
Oh, so you're all building.
You're all building cathedral. The same cathedral.
Can you sabotage someone else? Or?
So basically when you're claiming cards to build, you have to claim from the bottom up. So initially everyone has to claim on that first row. When someone's claimed a card in that first bottom row, then someone can claim the card above them. If whoever claimed the card above them builds their card before the person below them, that person below them loses points. And you lose more points the higher up that card is. So you can in that way, but there's no, like, once someone's claimed a card, you can't take it. You can't mess with it in any way. You can't take resources from someone. But it did feel quite interactive. And the number of times people stole the die that I was planning on my turn was just maddening. Which we were playing a 4-player game, which is the max player count. And it was fun. It was good. It was quite good. I think we all really enjoyed it.
Is this a game that you'd also buy? If you could buy games?
I might. It's tough because it's a very Euro-y game. It feels like a lot of other Euro games.
Well, how about this? In order for you to buy this game, you need to give a game up in your current collection. Would you do it?
Ooh. Maybe.
Yeah. So
probably.
Okay. So which game would that be? Because I'm just curious. Like, what is the closest analog of this game that this game is better than?
Ooh.
That sort of.
I'm gonna have to come back to that question next week.
Okay.
Because I don't know.
Okay.
But I feel like it could probably replace something.
Maybe that's our next episode.
Just maybe that's our next episode.
Which games we buy and which games we kick out.
Yeah. What games would we replace?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cathedral.
Yeah. It was good. It was thinky. It was much more thinky than you expect from a box that's really not that big. Yeah. It was good. Very solid. I think you'll really like it.
All right. Next up.
Next up, I played some quick solo games, so I'll hit on those quickly. Kokoro, Avenue of the Kodama. Mm, we've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. You're really good at this game. You always somehow manage to connect.
Or you're just very bad at it.
Maybe. You have to connect roots. You're trying to connect these sanctuaries together. You're going to flip a card. It tells you what shape of, it's a tree branch or whatever, but it's like a pipe. What shape? You can't rotate it. You can't mirror it. And I went into this like, okay, I know what Sharon does. I can do this too. I am going to build the best thing root. I'm going to connect everything. I thought I was planning so well. My first round, basically your round's over when you pull 4 yellow cards. And my first round, my first 4 cards, all yellow. I'm like, okay, this is not a great start. I can do this.
I really like to think that I'm really just super average. Like, I'm the median player of this game, and you're just like 2 standard deviations below the median point.
Maybe. That's I did just hilarious. Really badly.
It's supposed to be a mindful game. Is this a mindful game for you? Because when I play it, it's quite mindful.
It is mindful. Oh, I'm very frustrated, though.
Okay, you're just mindfully bad at this game, apparently.
Yeah. I'm just real bad at it. And I'd pull the right thing like one turn too late. Anyways, I do enjoy it. It's a solid game. The markers aren't great, though.
Oh,
we've gotten rid of a lot of those. But anyways, that's fine. Okay, wow, we rambled on a lot. So I think, why don't we finish up this episode with some of the quicker, lighter games? And then we've got 3 games set aside that I think are, you know, kind of bigger, heftier games that we could talk about a little more.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about those next week. Okay, so next one, quick solo game again, Rolling Realms.
Oh yeah, that's a solid one.
I enjoy this as a solo game. Like, yeah. It's got like a miniature golf course, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and it's like each round is a different, each hole is a different challenge, mm-hmm. and it keeps me coming back. How often am I going to want to come back once I'm finished the course? Who can say? But at that point, I'll have gotten at least 18 plays out of it, so can't really complain about that.
But for Rolling Realms,
sub $20 game,
really isn't a golfing game.
No.
For those that don't know what it is. Oh, yeah, they'll gosh, be like, oh, this is a game about mini golf. We did talk about it once, but since we're talking about it.
Rolling Realms is a Stonemaier game, and you're basically playing, it's a roll and write, playing like mini games with all their bigger games.
Yeah, so they're big, formal big box games. They've essentially condensed it.
To one card.
And you have certain elements in it. So it really does feel like a mini golf if you think of the other big games as, you know, a regular grown-up golf.
Yeah.
It does feel like a cartoonized version of what the real game is.
And the regular game you...
And it is a roll and write.
It is. In the regular game you're playing, basically each round you're going to have three different realms in there. Mm. And when you're rolling two dice, each round you can only put... You can't write numbers in the same realm twice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're collecting resources that can let you adjust those dice, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're playing with two or more players, you're basically playing with three cards three times. You're going to see nine of the, I can't remember how many realms come in the base, like 12 maybe. 12 games. Anyways, but whereas mini golf, each hole, it tells you which realms to take and it'll usually adjust the rules. You like have a challenge you have to meet. You have to get a certain number of points with some sort of limitation or something like that.
It almost feels like a spoof of the main games because, you know, the way that you score things does hark the original main games and all of those little mini games.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of promo cards for games that aren't included or newer games that they, mm-hmm. you know, obviously don't have in the base one. So.
Rolling Realms.
It's really a shame I can't pick some of those up right now. Mm-hmm. Anyways, moving on. All right. Next quick little game we played that I have been wanting to play for ages is Tussie Mussie.
Gorgeous. It's such a beautiful game. We have our friend do the print and play.
Yeah, so this is a Button Shy game by Elizabeth Hargrave of Wingspan fame. And it's 18 cards. Mm-hmm. Beautifully illustrated 18 cards.
Each a representation of a different bouquet with different flowers.
And so Tussie Mussie apparently refers to the, I think it was Victorian
practice
of giving messages with flowers.
Some of them are oddly passive aggressive.
A little bit.
You know.
But it was kind of nice because they'd have the pretty flowers, mm-hmm. beautiful, then they'd mm-hmm. tell you at the bottom what that message meant. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of them were a little questionable. Mm-hmm. But Tussie Mussie is super straightforward. You, on your turn, you pick up two cards. You're then obviously presenting another player with those two cards, and they get to pick which one they want and which one you get to take. The catch is that when you put those cards down, one of them's face up and one of them's face down. So it's really a trick of, okay, what card's better for me? What card's better for them? Do I even know that? And if so, how do I get them to take the card that they want? Or that I want them to take to leave me the card that I want.
What's kind of fun, too, is that you're not in this game taking away anything from anybody.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
It's the person that's receiving the bouquets that actually get to choose. So if you have a bad hand, you can't blame your opponent. It's really you making the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm. And it just, more than anything else, I got the Princess Bride vibe of, well, I clearly can't choose the wine in front of me, but you are the type of person who would poison their own wine. Or it's just, yeah, there's a lot of doublethink. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
I liked it. It was an oddly thinky-ish game. Compare, like, relative to it being an 18 card game.
Yeah, and each card's going to score in different ways. Maybe you want all, like, a bunch of the same color. You got hearts that mm-hmm. just give you points. Yeah, it was very straightforward, but really pleasant and nice and thinky.
And beautiful. The artwork is absolutely gorgeous. Yes. If you like pretty things and flowers and all of those things, that's the game to get.
Yep. All right, and then a quick update. I finally got to play the Lost Cities Roll and Write with more than just the two of us.
Oh,
played
nice.
It in a five-player game.
Go.
Max player count. It was great.
Oh.
It's better with more people.
Oh,
because so the game ends when you either cross off all the bridges. because you're racing up your expeditions, when you either cross off all the bridges or everyone is exhausted. So with five players, those bridges disappear really fast.
It's interesting that Lost Cities is such a classic two-player game, but that roll and write implementation plays better with more people.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot more competition for those bridges. And I will say, it feels kind of lucky, and it is, because it's really dependent on those dice rolls. But I was the only one who'd played it before, and we've played it a few times now. And I won it, and I felt like I won it because I knew the game. I had a good idea of when quite a few people went for crossing off those exhaustion markers early and ran. Basically, if you get to the end of that, you just lost out in 70 points. Whereas it was like, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, start with a die that's higher than a 4 or 5. But that led to a lot of early crossouts. I kind of felt like I had a better idea of when to do what.
So why was it better with more players?
More interaction.
Because
when it's just two of us, we're passing the dice back and forth. So you often get first choice and get the die you want.
Right.
Whereas with five, you have to wait four people before you get first choice. And the number of times the die I wanted disappeared, because usually everyone wants
a similar die,
the similar value at the same time.
Okay.
And those bridges went really fast. I think I only got one of them. Yeah, it felt it's not interactive really, but it kind of felt more interactive.
Does it feel like a better game now that you played it with more people? Because I think, you know, I enjoy it enough, but it's not one of my, like, top roll and writes.
It's probably not one of my top roll and writes, but I think I like it more than you do. Mm-hmm. And I did quite enjoy that play of it. Mm-hmm. It was good. Okay. Yeah. All right, next one I got to play without you was a 5-minute dungeon.
I've played that. No?
No. We have friends that have it. It's been brought up many times, but I don't think we've ever actually played it.
Oh, we have one deck dungeon. Okay, yes. 5-minute dungeon is different. Okay,
continue. So 5-minute dungeon, it is a co-op speed game, real-time game. So there's another one of those. Basically, you have a evil baddie that you're trying to fight, but before you get to fight the evil baddie, you have to go through their dungeon, basically, which is a deck of cards. And everyone takes a hero that comes with their own deck of cards, and each hero has one special ability that they can use. And so this deck of cards you're trying to get through consists of obstacles or monsters or people. And each card is going to have certain icons on them, like maybe swords or shields or arrows or something. And basically to get by them, you collectively have to discard the enough cards to match all of those requirements. And the trick, though, is you only have 5 minutes to get through this dungeon and beat the bad guy. And the big baddie has basically, it's the same idea. They have a bunch of icons on them.
Okay.
And you can only have 3 cards in your hand at a time normally. So some people's abilities will let them like discard cards so other people can draw cards. Something, but the trick is everyone's trying to go so fast. So you see someone needs maybe 3 swords and a shield and a map. That's what their icons are. And you're like, oh yeah, I got lots of swords. And by the time as you're tossing out your sword, someone's like, I've got the swords. And someone else is like, oh yeah, swords, I've got swords. By the time you realize 3 people have tossed down like 8 values of swords to cover 3 of them, you can't take those cards back. They're gone.
Oh.
So you need to be fast, but you don't want to be too fast and waste a bunch of resources.
Interesting.
And so we played the easiest one, which is Baby Barbarian.
Oh,
you're very cute.
I know Baby Barbarian.
And the guy teaching us, he's like, oh yeah, like no one ever loses to Baby Barbarian. It'll be great. Well, we're going to mix in some curses to make it harder. Yeah, we lost. But one of the curses, so he has an expansion that has curses.
Yeah.
So when you flip those cards up, everyone's cursed. And one of the earliest curses we got was that you can only use one hand. Much like Escape Curse of the Temple.
Yes.
Except now you've got one hand behind your back and you're having to pick up cards and you have to toss down cards. And we're all like, okay, hang on. I've got it. Hang on. I got to shake it out of my hand. And, oh, now I got to get more. That really slowed us down. And there's minimal ways to get rid of those curses.
That sounds like fun.
One of the curses was that you can only say waffle.
Waffle. Waffle, waffle.
So everyone's just saying waffle. And that would be amazing. But you know, it was a really fun, light, kind of real-time filler game.
Again, is this a game that you would buy?
It's tough.
Yeah.
We don't love real-time games.
No.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. It gets a little repetitive.
Mm.
I don't know.
Okay.
It was super cheap, though. Yeah, I probably would.
Okay. What if you can buy this game, but you need to replace it? Would you do that if you had to replace a game with it?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look.
Okay. All right.
Again, you're asking all these really tough questions.
No, because, you know, in the other game, you were quite confident that, yeah, you know, I probably. And then this game, you're like,
I have to go see what real-time games we have.
Okay. I won't ask you which particular game then. You can continue.
Okay. Okay. Next game, we played Stella Dixit Universe again.
Ah, classic. Beautiful game.
It's great. So our friend, the friend that brought it had just mixed a bunch of different Dixit cards in there.
Oh.
So we had, he'd separated out all the Dixit expansions. They were all in there. Cause he's like, I'm never going to play, you know, base Dixit again.
Right.
He's like, vastly prefer this. Yeah. So we could like pick which cards we wanted. We wiped all of the cards every round just so we could see more of them.
Oh, that's fun. I like that idea.
And it was interesting cause like, it was a very mixed group of us. Not everyone knew everyone really well. And I think initially, like, you know, some of us were, you know, on the heavier Euro game side. And they're like, oh, okay, this is what we're going to play? All right. And I think by the end of it, we were all into it. And like, Kristen Quick, why, how is that secret? What about that is secret? And like, we didn't actually high five, but we were feeling the high five when just two of us would get the same thing. And the others are like, I don't know what you're talking about. That makes no sense.
It's Stella, and we've talked about it so many times, but it's like a different type of social game,
mm-hmm.
right? It's, yeah, you're not talking too much about it at the beginning and you just have to, it's one of those like debriefy type of games. And it's, you learn about your friends in all these different ways.
There is the weird rules hump. We had a hard time because both him and I have played it before multiple times, but we still had a hard time remembering and explaining the, like, if you're by yourself, you pick the most, you have to flip your token. And if you like, that one's just a little weird, slightly weird rule or tricky rule in a game that's really should be super straightforward.
Mm-hmm,
but once you figure that out and you play it once, it all makes sense.
Sailing after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was great. I just had to reiterate that it was great even with people, if you don't know, everyone doesn't know everyone. All right. And the last quick and light filler game I got to try was Birds of a Feather, Western North America.
What is that? And are there lots of different expansions? It's like not just North America, but Western North America.
I think
also,
there was
what is Western, like the Northwest Americas? What's Western North America?
Well, I'm assuming that would be like us. Alberta, BC, and down.
Coast.
Yeah, West Coast.
Oh.
I'm assuming.
In California.
And down through North. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, so it is a very light filler game. You are all bird watchers. So everyone's going to start the game with a complete handful of cards, like just a lot of cards. And all of these cards have very pretty birds on them. Each bird has a habitat that it lives in, which is indicated by a little icon in the bottom corner and a color. And every card also, each bird also has a basically a rarity symbol or a little symbol indicated with it.
Mm.
So on... Well, everyone takes turns at the same time. Everyone's going to pick a card from their hand to play secretly, and then you're all going to reveal it. And if you happen to play a card that has the same habitat as someone else's card, then you both get to cross off both of your cards because you're in their habitat. So you see your bird and you also see their bird.
Oh, that's fun.
And then those cards that you just played slide into the middle.
Okay.
And then everyone has new arrivals and they play another card down for the next round. Now you can match, you know, a habitat. If you play a card, you can match a habitat with, you know, a new arrival that someone else played, as well as those cards that are still in the middle. And each bird you can only see once. So it isn't necessarily all that helpful to mark off, like to play yourself, play a bird from the same habitat twice in a row, because you're not going to get to cross off the one that you played the previous round or any other ones from the previous round, because you've already seen those birds. So it's not super strategic, but there definitely is a little bit. And kind of the bitey part of it is that you can play raptors. Each habitat has one raptor.
Do they eat all the other birds?
Well, if I play a raptor, say, for the ocean habitat, it's going to scare off all of those lingering birds that are in the middle.
Oh, fun.
And there's always two basically circles of cards. So once basically everyone plays a new arrival, they slide into the middle for the next round as a lingering bird. Everyone plays a new one. Then those old lingering birds go away. Those new arrivals slide down. So there's always just two circles of cards basically. So it changes up pretty quickly. And each bird is usually worth 1 point. There's some birds that are worth 2 points each. And there's one type of bird that's worth 0 points. but there's a bonus if you see all the birds. So you need that 0 point bird to be able to see all the birds in a certain habitat and get 3 bonus points.
Oh.
It's pretty straightforward. It also has a free app for solo play. So we all use the app. The guy who brought the game suggested we all download that to put our scores, like to calculate scores as we go, which made it super easy because you can just tick it off and on the app as you go. Plus, I tried the solo mode and it was, yeah, pretty chill. Wow. It's not like a super exciting game, but it was a pleasant little filler. Yeah, and I could see me pulling the app out once in a while. Yeah, that was Birds of a Feather, Western North America.
And that's it. That's it.
And that's it. That's it. That's all. We'll save our other 3 games, which will remain a mystery until next week.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, well, that was a long episode. Got through a lot of games. What games have you been playing lately? What are you excited about? You can let us know on Instagram, by email, on our Discord.
Or just look at our show notes. There's all these different ways to interact and engage with us.
Do that. And until next week, stay gancy.
Happy gaming. I'm just